If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Hey, Adam.
Ben, I was bit by my dog before I got on the mic today.
What the heck?
Does your dog ever bite you?
When I'm roughhousing with him, sometimes he'll have his mouth open and I'll encounter some, incidental tooth contact, but I'm the only person he does that with. Like, he doesn't even do that with my wife. And he doesn't ever do it in a way that would seem like an angry thing. Did you get an angry bite?
No. I would say that the quarantine affects everyone a little differently. And there's a long-standing game that my dog plays with me that I don't know the rules to. And the game goes something like, Adam is about to go do a thing that necessitates a goodbye of some kind to his wife. A goodbye that can involve an embrace or a little smooch or whatever. But the point is, I'm leaving and I'm giving some sort of affection to my wife before I do that. My dog hates this. Hates it so much that he'll see this happening before it happens. He'll see me like going for the approach. He somehow is able to recognize through my walk or my attitude that I'm about to go, and I'm about to go for a while. And he
doesn't want you to leave. He loves you.
And so he'll go in and do a little bite, and his tail is wagging. But he most definitely is biting me. And it's not like my dog, you and I have talked about. My dog is a medium mouth. He's not a bird dog. He will crush a bird if he has one in there. And so it is a not insignificant little bite he gives me every time. And I don't have the heart to discipline him in a stern way, in a way that a person who has a dog that bites them occasionally should probably do. Because I think it's fucking cute is my problem.
Yeah, it's cute. It sounds really cute.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm fine. It didn't break the skin. It never does. But I was just bitten.
Wow. I will occasionally, if I go to embrace my wife, find that my dog like makes a beeline from across the house to like bark at us.
Yeah.
Like, unhand her, you devil, kind of a thing.
Is this a reincarnation thing? Like, is this our wives' future husbands? Like, they have died because, you know, time is linear. Like, we're on this thing. There's no getting off. So in the deep, deep distance, we've got, after our eventual deaths, we have their new husbands and then their eventual deaths, and that husband comes back in time, becomes our dog.
Time has no meaning to the prophets.
Right.
I don't know, man.
That's probably not it.
They're just weird little beasts that are...
That's a very jazz gummy thing of me to say.
Yeah, they've co-evolved with us for tens of thousands of years to be socially acceptable companions, except for they come from a completely different species, so they miss a lot of cues.
We've bred out most of the traits that we find undesirable, except jealousy for some reason. Jealousy stays.
Yeah, jealousy, you can stay. Adam, I happen to have some business at the post office, so I braved the post office and...
Speaking of dogs, a dog's best friend.
And I rifled our P.O. box while I was there. I've got a couple of things to open up. Do you have any interest in a little bit of a mail call?
I think it's been a long-standing rule. Anytime anyone sends us something, we open it on the show.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
All right. First thing is a flat pack, and it is from Threadless. So I'm guessing a t-shirt. It's too flat to be a t-shirt. All right. Let's see what this thing is.
I mean, it could be a very flat t-shirt.
This is... Oh, wow. This... I think I know who made this. This is a little...
Oh, this, awesome.
This is Chef Jonathan Frakes doing the It's a Gouda show. there could be a pizza box of this Chef Jonathan Frakes.
Oh, that's
and a Bree Wharf Morn print.
Philippe Sobriero's work, right?
Yeah. Two beautiful art prints from our buddy Felipe in Brazil, I believe.
Yeah.
And boy,
that guy's talented. He's great.
I'm going to send these right back out for framing. One for you, one for me, buddy.
Excellent. I would like that very much. I really like his work.
Yeah, he's a super talented illustrator, and he's like a comic book artist too, I believe.
Felipe's got a web store at Threadless that I feel obligated to pimp now. I think among his new products on the web store are a series of masks. Masks, of course, a necessity at this point.
Oh, nice.
In these times. Have you seen these, Ben?
No.
So you have your choice of four masks. We have a Stallone, an Arnold Schwarzenegger, a Clint Eastwood, and a Charles Bronson.
Wow, this is like right up your alley.
I've got to send this link to you. I believe that the Bronson mask has a customer of one, and that customer is me. You can also get this Three Wharf Morn there, as well as the Papa Riker's pizza thing. You can get that emblazoned on anything. That's how the Threadless works. So,
oh, man. These masks are great.
Yeah.
I've been having a fun time making toothy faces at people under my mask that they don't know I'm making.
Something happened to me on a dog walk where I realized that when you pass a stranger without a mask, there is frequently a much more diminished kind of like greeting to us, a random, often in the form of a like minis up. But when you're wearing a mask, you need to gesticulate.
Yeah, you have to wave,
you have to get really big.
Yeah, yeah.
With that, and I had to do that today.
In The Expanse, the television show, and in the novels, even more so than the show, I think. The belters, the people that like have lived in space and grown up in space their whole lives, they have a lot more like sign language that is naturally part of their interaction because so much of their lives they spend in spacesuits, like outside the ship and unable to communicate with grins and nods.
I've only seen bits and pieces of that show, but I really like what I see.
I like
it's
that
one
show
of the good shows, right?
Yeah, I think that it gets better and better as a show, and the novels get worse and worse.
That is not usually how it goes, right?
Yeah. Well, the novels, there are like a zillion of them now. I think there's like 8 or 10 of the novels. And something I found out recently is that the novels are essentially adapted from a tabletop role-playing game. It's a series of novels where like so much changes over the course of them. It's kind of unlike anything
I've ever... Is Thomas Jane the constant? He's in the whole thing, right? Or does he die?
He is kind of a ghost guy after a little while, and I don't know. I think that character may get eliminated at some point, but I can't remember. All right, this is another one that also says Threadless on it. It says Connor Threadless from Riverside.
As in, that's his name?
I don't know if that's his name or
is it the CEO of the Threadless company? It looks like a bag of prescription comes in.
Yeah, it does. Oh my God! It's one of Felipe's. This is the Bronson face mask, I believe.
Oh my God!
Oh, there's a second one.
Did I just secret your mail run?
There's a Stallone and a Bronson here. And
wow!
I think these have to go to you.
They have to go to me because you would refuse to wear either of them, right?
I would wear those. I think I would probably wear the Eastwood or the Arnold. Personally, but wow. I'm gonna have to order them.
I mean, Eastwood's politics most neatly align with yours, so I would get that.
Yeah, I'm probably the most pro empty chair person on this podcast.
Right. If Felipe made a Kyle MacLachlan mask, people would think I just wasn't wearing a mask. That'd be trouble if I were to be out in public.
Oh yeah, that would look like nothing to people. Last one here is a flat
vanilla. Hey, we got to thank whoever that was. Who was that again?
I think it must have been Felipe that sent it.
You think it was Felipe again?
There is no note in these.
Okay. If it was Felipe, then thank you very much. Great friend of the show.
Last one is a flat manila envelope from Bree and Bradley Belke. Bree is one of the best friends of DeSoto.
She really is.
Bree's level of fandom is such that she has her own custom envelope closure sticker with her name on it that says live long and prosper.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That is above and beyond. That is beyond the rim of the starlight.
Bree's a real like bright, shiny star of being a fan of a thing in a way that I really appreciate. Like, she really cuts through the cynical bullshit in the world in a way that that I wish I was more like from time to time.
She has an aspirational kind of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
There is a note. Dear Ben and Adam, I came across this amazing fanzine on eBay while meandering the internet while in isolation. This fanzine is an adult fanfic novella about the love of Data and Tasha Yar. The illustrations delighted me, and I knew it had to become part of your slightly embarrassed collection. Keep up the awesome job. Hopefully, hooves in the future. Oh, man.
That's one of the things keeping me going, is the idea of a hoof with Bree Belke.
That is indeed. This is kind of a...
Please, Jackie and Lori, me. Some of those. Oh, my God.
All right. I gotta get out my phone. This has a very bodice rippery cover of Data about to lay one on Tasha with Q looking on, most disgusted in the background.
Do you think Q has seen everything? Like, what could possibly disgust him?
This is not as... I kind of thought that this was going to be a comic book, but it is a full... I mean, it's dense text. It's pages and pages of dense text. It's a story, Adam. I'm going to send you some of the... There are a few pages that are full-page illustrations, and they are incredible. I'm going to send them to you.
You know, when you were flipping through that book, that was not what I was expecting to see.
You thought there would be a lot more throbbing android boners?
Yeah. Yeah. Piston-like golden bones.
Wow. This is amazing. Roberta De Bono, the author of this, has written a whole series of these stories that are all available for purchase from Ankh Press in the back. And it looks like Ankh Press is in Alameda, California, one town over from my hometown of Oakland. Looks like, yeah, there's one about, maybe, like, this may be, Counselor Troy, and I want to say that's Khan from Star Trek II that she's smooching. Oh, no, it's the handsome King of Zoril, the planet, a planet which combines 24th century technology with a barbaric culture. So that's real bodice rippery.
This is great.
Boy, the number of romantic directions you can take these characters in is truly magnificent. How about this one? A joy postponed. Captain Picard, Beverly Crusher, and the Battle Bridge crew of the Enterprise are lured into the mysterious Zone of Darkness, where an alien power forces them to act out their fantasies in a terrifying drama of love, power, desire, and death.
Do you think there's such a thing as a person for whom their only sexual interest is a Star Trek character or story, a sort of Trek sexual, if you will?
I believe that that's possible. I listen to the Dan Savage Savage Love podcast a lot, and one thing he talks about is occasionally are people who have sexual fetishes that are impossible. Like, I only want to fuck centaurs as a close at hand example, and like the, you know, like what a tough spot you're.
It really reframes the waiting for the right one. Yes,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Tasha Yar, a character that was on for a handful of episodes in season one, is the only one for me.
That's tough.
That would be a tough place to live.
That's a crush made a lot tougher as the pixie haircut went out of style.
Thank you to everyone that sent something in. If you'd send something to us, you can email us at drunkshimoda@gmail.com, and we give out the P.O. box to people that don't seem like lunatics.
That's a good policy.
Yeah. Speaking of lunacy, Adam, do you want to get into the episode that we came here to discuss?
There is so much to discuss today, Ben, as we get into Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 20, His Way. Maybe the most Tin Man title we've had in a long time.
Yeah, you're really walking that.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No. Of course you don't.
This episode opens in the holosuite. We don't know that. I mean, at the opening, we just think we're in an old-timey version of Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, maybe they, for some reason, the Deep Space Nine crew went to that TNG planet with the weird hotel casino and the revolving door.
If you gotta win, you gotta hear.
It seems like the episode calls them out, right? Because when Vic Fontaine finishes his number, he comes over and, you know, gets introduced to the team. But he drags them for coming to the holosuite in uniform. Like, these guys are fucking boring as hell, right? Like, getting off work and in uniform going to socialize together.
I think one of the pleasures of this episode is how self-aware Vic is about himself and other people. And I like the kind of confidence he has in just throwing it right back at, like, the what is it? It's like he's throwing the gaze back at them, right? Like, he's not just a hollow sweet person to be looked at and fucked like so many hollow sweet characters. He's gonna flip them some shit right back.
He has like a lot of DNA in common with the character in the Bynars episode of TNG. What was her name?
Minuet,
right. Yeah, like he...
Except he also has some Moriarty in him. Like, some super smarts.
He has some super smarts, which does make him feel a little more dangerous than the episode treats him as. Like, the fact that he's, like hacking systems and, like, showing up places he's not supposed to is semi-scary stuff. And He never causes any real danger to anyone.
There's a moment where Bashir is like, you know, this program is made by the great Felix, maker of of programs like Weird Spy Game that you saw me play a couple of seasons ago. Like the idea of this being like one of the great Holosuite programs you can have. But I want to know if upon booting up the Holosuite program, is Vic Fontaine self-aware at that moment, or is the program started and then later on he becomes self-aware? And the reason I ask is if Vic Fontaine is self-aware as soon as the program starts, he's like ready to fuck, right?
Trust me, he's no ordinary hologram.
Because that's what a Holosuite program is for.
Yeah, and in this episode, more so than any other episode. The way this opens, though, is he is singing a number up on stage. We you know, cut around the room a little bit. We get the wides, we get the close-ups on period-appropriate audience members, and then we start to find the cast hanging out at the bar, which is like definitely where I like to chill in a room like this.
Yep.
I want access to the bartender so I can keep ordering those drinks. And maybe my favorite shot in the episode is Odo starting to nod his head and Kira taking sincere delight in finding out that Odo likes dad music.
Nodding on the one and the three. That's what Odo's doing.
Yeah. It's an episode that is all about calling out all the characters on this show for being the squares that they are.
You know what a square is, right?
It's one side of a cube.
Vic does that magic trick where he comes over and he tells everyone their deal right to their face. Everyone's coupled up in this moment. Mm-hmm. And this is something that Vic notices right away. He knows that Worf and Dax are together. He knows that Bashir and O'Brien are together.
He knows that Kira and Odo are Diane and Sam.
Right.
He basically asks them, will they or won't they?
Yeah, and this begins a pattern of behavior for Vic where he is sort of magically knowledgeable about people in a way that does not seem to be supported by reality in any way.
Yeah. Like,
the Felix programmer character is someone I'd really like to know if sure. This is how sophisticated Vic Fontaine is.
Felix is a genius. Yeah. But
there's like the wisecrackiness of Vic Fontaine takes away a lot of the malevolence that could easily be imbued in him, right? Like,
right.
Like if he were to come up to you with any other attitude than the attitude he has in this episode and we're like, Benjamin R. Harrison, address is this address. your favorite things are these. Like it'd be scary.
Right, right. Yeah. But he's kind of doing, I think that like a certain kind of famous person does this like casually to advance their charisma, like notices a specific thing about you and compliments you on it when you mm-hmm. meet them. You're like, I can't believe I just talked to George Clooney and he said I had a nice haircut. Can you fucking, you know, like you'll
it
never
makes
forget
you love them forever.
You'll never forget that interaction. And right. He could count on you showing up to his movies for the rest of your life.
You're always going to buy the biggest bottle of Casamigos after that.
They finish their hang in the Holosuite, some more awkwardly than others. Odo's definitely back on his heels a little bit. And they're down in Quark's bar, and Dax's loose lips sink some ships in this scene because she lets slip that Kira is headed to Bajor to spend some time with Shakar.
The Sleep Institute of Shakar, I guess.
Yeah. the REM cycles that she shows there are deeper and more restful than anywhere else.
Yeah. Kira takes great umbrage with this being put out in the street the way it is, as if to attempt to cover for something maybe untoward, maybe scandalous.
Right.
Her reaction here, I think, is vital in propelling Odo down his story path here.
Right. The indication that Kira may be falling back into the arms of Shakar is making him somewhat desperate. So desperate, in fact, that he seeks Quark's advice on how to court Kira.
this is after the theme, and it's really fun the terminology that Quark uses in having this conversation with Odo, because he's using financial terminology with him about his lack of action, basically.
You've had plenty of time to arrange a merger with Kira.
I'd say that I like the idea of this a little bit more than I like it in execution, because I don't think that a Ferengi thinks of taking a mate as a merger. I think that they probably consider that more of a hostile acquisition.
Right. Hey, I wonder to what extent Quark thoughtfully softens his vocabulary here.
You think he's doing that for Odo's benefit?
Yeah, I think so. The big takeaway from this scene is that Odo, if he truly did have feelings for Kira and he has not acted on them, as he seems able to admit here, he's wasted all this time, and time appears to be running out if Kira is going to go visit Shikar.
Yeah.
Like, there's a window that's closing.
Right.
And luckily for him, he can turn himself into a closed window size person to squish into her heart.
Yeah, he could become paper thin and slide right under the jam.
Right.
He asks Quark at the end of this scene a favor, because if Quark's advice is not helping him bed Kira, only one person's advice can. Of course, he learned this because Bashir mentioned that that's one of the utilities of the Vic Fontaine program, is that he's been able to get great advice on Cherchez la Femme from Vic Fontaine. And now Odo would like to seek that same advice.
So I wonder if there was ever a moment where they thought about making this program about one of the best stick men in all of Starfleet, Commander William Riker.
Oh yeah.
Like, he plays in a jazz combo. He's not a singer, but he's an entertaining type.
And there's nothing more erotic than playing the trombone.
You know what? Like, as soon as I offered the idea of this, you know, my mind clapped it shut by thinking, it's wrong, Ben. It's wrong to make a Holosuite program featuring a real person, right? You can't do it. It's immoral.
I think illegal. I think we've found out that it's technically illegal inside the Federation.
This is a violation of protocol. Crew members should not be simulated in the holodeck.
Commander, I don't think there's any regulation against...
Well, there ought to be.
Maybe Bajor has a slightly different set of laws.
Yeah. So Odo enters the holosuite to talk to Vic Fontaine, and Vic is more than interested in making him over immediately.
Yeah.
After hearing his plight.
I like the effect of Odo changing his uniform into a 1950s style tuxedo.
Is that what the tie is? The lay flat tie? That's a 50s effect?
That is called a neck bow, Adam. And it's definitely a 50s thing, but it's kind of, it's not a very Vegas-y 50s thing. And as far as I can tell, more of like a rockabilly formal wear.
Oh, that's fun. Like, he was just a bolo tie and a cowboy hat away from a totally different look.
But I think that this is like kind of more 90s evening wear, like black tie, you know, definitely has weird trends, and like Vic Fontaine's shirt with a zillion buttons down the front is probably the most obnoxious tuxedo shirt I've ever seen. Save for like the ones in like Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, you're not hosting Family Feud.
Right. But yeah, Odo's tie is a very weird and specific choice. Their suits are just not that good, you know? Like, they're kind of rental tuxedo-looking tuxes.
There is a lot of advice that Vic Fontaine gives to Odo throughout this episode, and not all of it is terrible.
Right.
Not all of it is problematic. Maybe the least...
What a charitable way of framing it, Adam.
maybe the least of which is the advice right off the top, which is Vic sizes up Odo and he's like, you know, it may be nice if you decided to become the sort of person that people like being around, for starters. Right. And by that, he means like just loosening up. He uses the scene where he plays at the piano with him as a way to get him to just kind of like, if you don't know how to do something, it's okay. Just have fun with the thing that you don't know how to do. And there's so many different versions of this in a person's life, you know, like where you don't need to not try a thing because you're afraid you can't do it perfectly.
Right.
Just try the thing and have fun with it. And if it doesn't work out, then you try something else.
Like, for example, us trying to have a podcast has,
right,
we haven't gotten good at it, but we're going to keep trying.
We're having fun with it.
We're having fun with it. And that's what's most important. And I really like Rene Auberjonois' performance going from uneasy and worried at coming across like a fraud because the piano is playing itself to really getting into playing the character of a guy who's playing great piano.
There's a lot going on in this scene because it's Vic like trying to get Odo to understand that if you're not having fun, acting like you're having fun is a way to eventually have fun, right?
Right.
And this is a thing that I think they talk about after the performance is over, is Odo is like, man, it's crazy to be up on stage. And I would have been terrifically nervous if any of my friends or coworkers are here, but it's nice. Like, you can't even see into the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, this is a familiar feeling that I've had on stage with you before, which is like, in those very early shows, it was easy to feel nervous because it was a brand new thing for us, and you just hope it's fun and funny to anyone else.
I'm just grateful none of my friends saw me.
The way that Odo puts it rang as especially true to me. Like, the lights are bright. You can't really see anyone out there. You just try to have a good time with your co-host and hope it works out.
I think the core of the advice of if you want to be with someone, try to think about how you can be a nice person to spend time with.
Try to think about how you can be withable.
And I'm not sure that like playing fake piano is the perfect metaphor for that, but it's, I think, surprisingly good given the direction that this episode goes.
Right. There's not only afterwards drinks, which seem fun. You know, you get off stage, you go to the bar, you have a couple drinks. Then there's the after show hang back at Vic's apartment, where he has produced two ladies.
Babes that caught the show and want to come hang out.
What is it with tertiary characters in Deep Space Nine that want our main characters to fuck? That happened in the O'Brien undercover story, and it's happening here.
Yeah.
Would Vic have just stayed in the next room and listened to Odo fuck these women?
I don't know, because I think that like, if you think of the program as being designed for Bashir, probably what would happen.
Hey, Vic, I'm here and I drank a gallon of water just like you asked.
Right. Yeah. If the program ran its course, it would not be champagne in those coupes.
Right.
But it definitely seems like there's going to be like a comedy show and dinner before there's any underpants hijinks going on.
Are you classically trained?
Oh, actually, Vic taught me everything I know.
But these ladies are down for it, right?
Melissa seems down for sure. But Odo cuts that off, and we cut to work, real work, and the real world, where Odo briefs Sisko on some bullshit. And then this scene is so weird. It's related to absolutely nothing else in the entire episode. It exists only to amuse, I think.
Yeah.
Odo starts absentmindedly singing to himself, and Sisko loves this.
Yeah.
And then joins in.
No, no, they can't take that away from me.
I wish they'd like harmonized a little bit more, like start, because they're both kind of singing under their breath, like Sisko's snapping his fingers. And I wish
on the twos and the fours.
I wish they'd broken out in song, like come out into ops, like see if they could get other people in on it. Like, what if we just had a little singing around the office every so often? That'd be fun. That's good team building.
Science fiction shows of this era had the musical episode, right?
Sure.
Why not this one?
Why not? Where's Joss Whedon when you need him? Yeah, I think that Sisko's like cultural interests often kind of run in this era, like with his baseball interest and the Far Beyond the Stars being another recent episode. And it starts to seem like maybe someone in the writer's room has more interest in writing a show about the 50s than they do about the 2450s or whatever this is.
You know, what's fucked up is that a person who looks like Benjamin Sisko, probably not invited to a Vegas lounge of this era of this time, you know?
I was reading a thing right before we got on the mics, just happened to come across a thing about how Frank Sinatra was like one of the people that forced Vegas to stop being segregated because he refused to perform in segregated venues.
Good for him.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what the timing of that was, but yeah, like the...
It was the 80s?
Yeah. This is like an episode that like stays completely far away from from any of those issues. But I think crucially, when you cut around the room when Vic Fontaine is performing, you're not seeing black extras in those seats.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
We're in the real world very little. We get that scene with Odo and Sisko. We get a little scene with Dax and Bashir talking about what may or may not be happening between Kira and Shikar.
She and Shikar must be having a good time.
That'd be my guess.
And then we're back in the holosuite, where Vic is excoriating Odo about how focused he is on Shikar as a thing. Vic is encouraging him to ignore the other people and concentrate on himself, on bettering himself.
It's not about taking down the other man. It's about making yourself a better option.
Right.
And Vic is also very pro, like, walk before you can run, practice, practice, practice. And this is when he introduces the, you know, Melissa was one kind of practice for Odo, but Vic introduces another kind of practice that's a little closer to the genuine article in the character of Lola Cristal.
Ooh, just a total smoke show is Lola Cristal.
Lola Cristal is wearing, like, if you translated the pizza oven killing outfit into evening wear,
right,
that's the gown that Lola Cristal performs in. Lola Cristal is Bajoran, despite performing on Earth in the 50s.
Yeah, the band is horrified when looking at her and then just runs.
Yeah, the upright bassist keeps stopping playing and going, "What happened to your nose? Oh, my God! Ah, that's scarring. My word.
It's your brother, Marvin. Marvin Barry. You know that nose ridge you've been looking for?" It is a scorching rendition that that actually has some meaning to Nana Visitor. I read, like, this is a song that, like, she and her mom bonded with a family friend over, like, and she wanted to, like she sort of conjured those memories up in order to perform it in the way that she does. Like, for all of the many positives of a performance like this, you also have the heavier negative, Ben, which is the illusion of consensual imagery in a holosuite and the idea of holosuite law.
Right. This is a Leah Brahms situation a-brewing.
Yep. I'm guilty of a terrible crime, Doctor.
Odo is quite uncomfortable initially. Like, she is performing the hell out of this song and, you know, is an incredibly tempting lady in doing that. It's a very sexy performance. And Vic Fontaine is kind of like pushing their heads together and going like, "Now kiss." And Odo kind of backs away from it initially, you know, to his credit, I want to say.
Right. It's the sort of discomfort that isn't specific. Like, you understand his discomfort is because this is supposed to be her and isn't, but there is no reference to the morality of a moment like this. It's his own personal relationship to what is moral and what isn't versus an idea that Vic Fontaine doesn't know right from wrong when doing things beginning now. Right, and that's, I think, when you start to feel that with Vic Fontaine's great power comes zero responsibility.
Totally. Yeah. You're like, Jesus, Bashir, did you meet Felix on like 4chan? Is he primarily a deepfakes author?
Yeah. This is the second time in a row where Vic Fontaine has tried to make something physical happen between Odo and someone conjured out of the holodeck. And Odo, again, turns it down. He storms out. He's tired of the holograms.
This is a Star Trek moment that we've seen a few times, right? Where a woman is offered to a male character who is so, like, oversexed that he pushes her away because this is not the real thing and it's not
right.
going to be satisfying on that level.
I don't need your fantasy women.
But it is like, yeah, like it's weird that the episode like asks Nana Visitor to portray a version of her character that is like this, you know? Like that's some pretty creepy stuff for a writer's room to put in a script, I think.
I agree.
Because like this is their coworker, you know, like do this extremely sexy thing so we can all watch you do it.
It doesn't feel great to see that. And it doesn't forgive the moment by having Odo reject it, I don't think. Not all the way anyway.
Yeah. I don't think we're catching up with him like immediately after this, but the next scene is Odo bumping into Kira after her trip to Bajor, and she is out of uniform. She's in civilian clothing, which I think is a great costuming choice in this moment, because if her trip was an entirely professional thing, she might have gone and come back in uniform. But the fact that she's not in uniform sort of puts us in the headspace of, oh, she was on vacation.
Right. She's wearing 2 sleeve of wizard as a dress.
It was the style of the time.
She's got to be constantly rolling those things up if she wants to have a drink or something.
Look at this cuff, and it's flopping all over the place. Look at that.
It's awkward, though, this meeting between Odo and Kira, because Odo knows something that Kira does not, and that is he was just hanging out with her.
Yeah, it's he was just jacking off to a photo of her. and then ran into her immediately after.
Right.
Kira has traditionally been a character that basically couldn't be caught dead in the Hollow Suites, but has apparently, in the off-screen story arc, taken to setting up a prayer cave of some kind in the Hollow Suites. And her next scene is hanging out in this like meditation room full of candles, praying when Vic Fontaine, without her consent, crucially, enters the program.
This is where I think it's easy when you're watching an episode to just sort of guess at its ending. And this is really the moment where I began to feel like Vic Fontaine has been constructed to give you the nice face, but the totally evil back face. Like he could be a threat to people. And this is a moment where I started to feel that way. Like he's going where he's not invited.
Yeah.
And he's starting to manipulate for his own ends in a way that Moriarty did.
Right. It's very interesting that I think we have our moral complaints about what Vic Fontaine does in this episode, but it's interesting that they never take it in the direction of like, now Vic Fontaine is presenting a crisis on the station because his program has run amok.
this is the moment where Kira should have gone into Sisko's office and been like, hey, did you know that we might have a Moriarty situation here?
Yeah, and then like getting Quark in trouble because like there's some safety device that he like turned off because it would save him like 2% on his electricity bill or something like that.
It's not just the invasion of a private space by a character that is creepy. It is the meddling between two people's affairs that Vic Fontaine does here, because he begins telling Kira all about the Odo that he knows, that Kira couldn't possibly know, and that I think you'd really like having dinner with him tonight.
And implies that he was sent to make this invitation on Odo's behalf.
Right.
Are you trying to parent trap us?
So she kind of grudgingly agrees to it, but, you know... I think if you're Kira, you've got to turn this invitation down when it is presented in such an invasive way.
When did you can't take no for an answer stop being a thing?
Yeah.
Because that is a quality of seduction that, like, I remember that being said in movies and TV shows over and over and over again as a... You know what? Like you just got to meet like a movable object with enough force.
Right.
Not taking no for an answer is that force.
Yeah.
I'm glad that that's gone out of style, but when did that happen?
It definitely bumped me in this episode.
Yeah.
I think that there's there's probably like an American Studies dissertation in that question somewhere.
There was a moment it became a threat. I'm not sure when that was, but it did not predate this episode. So
I guess Kira turns this down, and the next morning she wakes up and there's a horse head in her bed. And she finally agrees to do the date.
Right. Is it less creepy that this is happening without Odo's knowledge? I think it has to be yes.
Yeah, it takes a large amount of the creep factor away from Odo.
If Odo triggered this moment, I almost believe his character is not redeemable in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing the way this... It's almost unbelievable the way this episode unfolds after this, because he gets a call in his office. Vic Fontaine comes through the comms.
I told you never to call me on this wall. This is an unlisted wall.
And... is told, like, you're going to go on a date with a perfect holographic facsimile of Kira, and this is going to be your final training for the real event. And
if you can snatch the Kira from my hand, you can leave the temple.
Yeah. Enough waxing off.
Right.
Let's go see if we can take down Cobra Kai.
This is another malevolent move by Vic, because he's not just creating circumstances and manipulating people. He's actually lying to real people. He's lying to Odo here.
He's lying to Odo, but he's also telling Odo about a bad thing that Odo is going to go participate in, and Odo agrees to it. He's lying to Odo not to present Odo a moral version of what's going on. Like, simulating the girl you have a crush on in the Holosuite is not okay.
You remember how uncomfortable you were with Hollow Kira before? Well, we've made some improvements. Let's watch what happens.
What are you doing now?
Exactly. He forces a level one Brahms event, and we get this date. It is Odo across from Kira, all gussied up in their evening wear in the Holosuite. And the wheels come off the wagon when Odo starts to kind of like under his breath go like, nice move, Vic. You really nailed it with the verisimilitude. And they both realize what has happened, and it is incredibly embarrassing for both of them.
You've been dancing with the real McCoy.
You tricked me.
And me.
My eyes may be tricking me.
It's embarrassing, but it's in its way, it's also tragic. In the way that the writer wants it to be, it is also tragic. Because you see how Odo could have been in a circumstance where he was less shy and unafraid about presenting his true feelings to a person.
Yeah.
He actually manages to do those things, and then a personal victory for him. And by that, I mean, not at the expense of Kira, but I mean, like, he's actually had a growth moment for his character, being able to share himself in that way.
Yeah, get a little vulnerable.
Yeah, it's destroyed in this moment.
It sort of undercuts the premise of the episode that Vic Fontaine is some genius of love, too, because it really exposes what a creepy thing this was. And also sort of makes you believe that their chances have been dashed, right? Like they probably won't get together after such a creepy thing happened on their first date.
I feel like Vic is creepy because he presents as human instead of as computer. Like, I wonder to what extent he becomes less creepy if he's more like the Whopper from War Games, where he's like, we're going to go into Odo date level 2.
Shall we play a game?
And then see what happens. And then level 3. And then, like, if we were to depersonalize this, and I'm not saying, like, make it not Kira. It could still be Kira, but if Vic were more prescriptive in how computer-like he's making all of these hoops that Odo is jumping through, would that make it less creepy than it is? Because I think Vic acting so human and projecting that sort of humanity is what makes him the terribly flawed human, the disturbing human that we project onto him.
Right. It's
like the thing about the Cyrano de Bergerac story is that, like,
which crucially they did a version of with Lieutenant Barclay in TNG.
I feel like that was what did this and didn't this show learn from that episode is something that I thought about at this exact moment in his way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're gonna wear our love interest down until they relent mentality has been such a part of romantic stories for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it still kind of is. Like, there's, like, we don't like it in real life, but for some reason, it's an extremely powerful story structure in our myths. And I wonder what that's about.
I think you see it more and more with the gender roles reversed, which has been, I mean, I don't know if it makes it better, but
yeah.
Representatively, I think there have been improvements, I guess. But boy, this date is rough, and the intensity with which Kira furrows her brow is like an enduring visual for me. Like, she knits it and then she never stops for the rest of the episode, I feel like.
The needle pegging embarrassment that they end this date with is matched only by the embarrassment I feel at having a Star Trek podcast with my friend Adam.
Yeah, we know exactly how this feels. I've Got You Under My Skin is such a fucked up song to sing to Odo specifically, right? I mean, I could literally put her under my skin.
I could make skin and then have her under it. I've only got gold under my skin. Gold goop.
Yeah. Kira is the one that's called it a date the whole time. And I think that's an interesting aspect to this thing. That's a word that I don't think Odo really uses, or at least uses first,
mm-hmm.
which I think tells us how game Kira is for the idea of this being that way. And that's another way it gets the creep factor off the hook.
Yeah. Right. Because it would be one thing if Kira was super not into Odo, but the fact that she is so into Odo that she's willing to forgive what happened does go a long way to making this less bad.
Right.
And she confesses to Dax, like, maybe the next day on the promenade, that she's had a moment of clarity, and that turns into her chasing Odo down down the way, and they kind of get into an argument that resolves in a big fat smooch.
Why don't I just get it over with and kiss you right now?
Well, why don't you?
This is a scene that only a man would write, I think. Because this is A to K, as far as the story goes. Where were we previously? We were in a hollow suite where things were at their worst.
The path back to makeouts is so short. It's astonishingly short.
It's incredible.
Right.
And I know we're meant to feel catharsis from this. We're meant to feel like we've just watched John Krasinski and the secretary from The Office kiss. Like, we're supposed to feel like
Jim
like
and
that.
Pam.
Yeah, is this our Jim and Pam?
Right.
Moment.
Yeah. Our Sam and Diane moment. Yeah, it's
the show thinks it is.
It does. I kind of think that the editor thinks it's absurd though, because they start kissing and the camera immediately cuts to Quark going like, "Oh."
Yeah.
I think that some of the people involved with this saw how silly it was.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the catharsis is somewhat satisfying on the basis that you can tell that the characters do really like each other, and it has been something that the show has been leading up to for a long time. It just feels like the episode took a big fat shortcut at the end to get there.
I agree completely. Yeah.
The button may be the part that strains credulity the most, because Odo comes back to thank Vic Fontaine.
Thanks, Vic.
That really could have gone terribly, but it didn't. So, thank you, I guess.
In basically any other century than this one, people would have cringed and never stopped.
I've been trying to figure out how I could put handcuffs on a honey stick, and I can't figure out a way to do it. So I guess I'm just going to leave you in this honey stick.
Vic Fontaine's Come Fly With Me into credits is what we get. And we are left to decide whether or not we liked the episode, Ben.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it, do it!
Did you like the episode?
Boy, there's a lot I do like about it. It's not a total clusterfuck. And I think that it's like kind of a product of its time, you know? It's not like other shows were not doing creepy shit like this,
right,
in 1995 or 96 or whatever.
Right.
I guess I like medium like it. Like, Vic Fontaine as a character is a lot of fun. I mean, it's amazing to me that he is introduced in episode 20 of the second to last season of this show, because I feel like he really looms large over my memory of what Deep Space Nine is all about.
Huh.
And you can see why they saw this guy playing this part and were like, we got to have this guy back. Because his charisma is undeniable, but the storyline that they use that charisma for does not age well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty well put. If this show were hosted by a couple of virtue signaling simps, I think your take on the episode would be more simplistic than I think we're doing right here. I think this isn't a musical, right?
Right.
But the musical aspects of it give it a magical reality that I think hypnotizes you into not being as hard on it as maybe one could or should be. I think the way I'm going to come down on this episode is that I think Nana Visitor is a great actor, and I think you're taking advantage of her greatness by writing something like this that is not grounded in a character's reality as we know it and depending on her to sell it.
Yeah.
Which she does. She utterly does, because that's all she can do.
She can sell water to a well, man. She's fucking incredible.
I think she makes you forget how much effort it takes to do an episode like this when I'm not sure she's a believer.
Yeah.
And I know in what little... This is such an outlier of an episode to me. I really wanted to know what Renee Auberjonois and Nana Visitor thought about this. Mm-hmm. And both of them disagreed with this path to their characters.
Wow.
And it is so... I understand that the hubris that a showrunner has. I really do. I get the idea that Ira Stephen Bayer would write the story and go, this is true. This is what I believe to be the truth of these characters. But I think you need to listen to your actors a little bit.
Yeah.
If they say that this isn't it. And
this ain't it, Ira.
I think that this episode is artfully and interestingly done. I'm unclear on what the message is to it. And this isn't a show about messages, but like, is it about confession and honesty being a way towards making strong relationships with people you care about?
That's the thing, right? Like, some of the advice at the beginning of the episode is so good. Be vulnerable. Tell her how you feel.
And they fucking bury it.
Be fun to be around. And then all of that is pushed to the side so that there can be this, like, the world's creepiest parent trap as a plot device.
Yeah. One last thing I'll say is that you see this only through Odo's perspective, and that's what makes the jump at the end so difficult to believe, right? Mm-hmm. This is all about what Odo wants. And I would really... This is an example of Kira's character being underserved the entire series.
Right.
We've known her for 6 seasons, almost 7 seasons by now. I could not tell you what type of person Kira Nerys is interested in, what type of person would make her happy. If I were to build a character that I would want her to fall in love with, I have no idea where to begin there.
Right. The real advice that Vic Fontaine should be giving Odo is be more boring. That's the kind of man she obviously likes.
I wonder if we'll ever know that much about Kira, as much about her as we should know for a co-star of this show. Yeah. She's up there with Avery Brooks. Like, she's the fucking star. How much less do we know about her than Sisko? I don't know. I think this is an episode that's emblematic of that problem. But again, I'm with you. Not a bad episode, just a thought-provoking episode in some ways.
I'm also curious to find out what kind of person sends a P1 to the Greatest Generation.
A real sick fuck, that's who. I mean, is your P1 about honesty and showing us who you are? Or is it some form of manipulation, Ben? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. We're going to find out.
Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, a couple of Priority 1 messages here. The first one is from Lord Rat, and it's to Gabe. It says, I may be stranded in a politically unstable second world country, but I can still set money on fire with the best of them. I'm happy you started listening to this pod so that you know why I say ankylosaur so much. Ankylosaur?
Ankylosaur.
I hope this message makes sense since I'm day drunk as I'm writing this. Anyway, cheers to my BFF. Take care over there. Ankle.
I have no problem pronouncing the word ankle. Why do I have such a hard time with ankylosaur?
The world may never know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we're all going to be lighting our money on fire for warmth any day now. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be so confident, Lord Rat.
Lord Rat has the day drunk confidence that when they were asked to fill out what date they're requesting for their P1, they wrote, whenever, yo.
Nice. I like the cut of Lord Rat's jib. Ben, our second Priority 1 message comes from Olivia, a.k.a. Micah, and the message is to Olga. Message goes like this. Here's a holodeck message for my sweetest ensign. When you were young, we spent a lot of time separated, but one of my happiest memories was watching TNG with you. Are you hearing this embarrassing pod in the kitchen right now? Are we making pizza? Only time knows. You are loved, Olga. Never stop exploring.
Wow. Making pizza at home is something that is so much input, but the rewards are incalculable.
This has been a hobby that my wife has taken up lately. I think we're going to make our third pizza of the week.
Wow. Tomorrow. That's a lot of pizza.
You just make up a bunch of dough. You make up all the dough, and then you just segment it into three or four, and then you're set for the week.
Yeah, that's a great way to live. Well, if you want to live with a Priority One message in our inbox, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message or $200 for a commercial message. And we really appreciate it.
Gotta get that gold press latch.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I like the guy who works at Quark's bar who drops his little menu device on the ground when he watches Kira and Odo kiss. I felt like that guy. Big time.
Yeah, that guy caught my eye too, and my drunk Shimoda is actually from the same scene, because we do get like a cut around of everybody reacting to this very public display of affection. And there is a character that I think is standing near Dax, I want to say. I gotta scrub to it. He kind of looks like a Cenobite.
Yeah.
In a way. He's got like three-fingered hands, but also kind of like pinhead looking loaf. And his gasp really made me laugh. So gasping Cenobite, I guess, is my drunk Shimoda.
Wow. everyone just blown away by this kiss cue.
Yeah. Like,
God, are we going to get an entire season?
Quark's bar. Morn and everybody gets up and goes to the door to see what's happening.
I already can't wait until they break up. Ben, is that going to happen in the next episode? I'd like to know.
The next episode is season 6, episode 21, The Reckoning.
Oh, good. It sounds like the title of a breakup episode. Awesome.
Sisko must risk his son's life to fulfill his role as the emissary. Damn. That is not the kind of reckoning I was picturing.
That's some real Old Testament prophets shit right there, right?
No kidding.
Time to sacrifice your, for some reason, Jake. get in good with the gods.
How many episodes since Jake was in an episode? It seems like a lot.
Yeah.
Like Far Beyond the Stars, maybe the last one I can think of that he did anything in.
Yeah, and for some reason Jake died in that one.
Oh yeah.
Huh.
Well,
been a while.
I'm looking forward to that, and I'm also looking forward to firing up the Game of Buttholes, Will of the Prophets, to find out how we will be consuming that episode. Our runabout is currently on square 74. There is an nth degree square off in the distance. That is the episode format that forces us to do extensive research.
Everybody's favorite version of our show, the extensively researched version.
Right.
Famously, no one comes to Greatest Gen for the most researched Star Trek podcastery. You get what you get.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I'm going to go ahead and roll this bone, Adam. See what we get.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
I have rolled a 2, so we've jumped to square 76, a regular episode next week on The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine.
All right. I'm really wondering how long this relationship's going to last, Ben. And I'm not talking about the one between you and me. I mean, is this the rest of the series?
I can't remember.
Maybe you shouldn't answer that. We'll find out as we go.
No spoilers.
I'm gonna need a lot of Kanar to get through the rest of this series, if that's the case.
Well, Adam, what we need to get through this show is the support of our listeners who go to MaximumFun.org/join and support on a monthly basis. It's really easy, and it's not very painful. We got to thank our buddy Adam Ragusea, who didn't make trading cards, who made the original...
He makes food trading cards on YouTube.
He made the original theme music of the show, the Sisko song, of course, based on Dark Materia's original Picard song. We appreciate both of them for letting us use their beautiful, beautiful music.
Bill Tilly's a ray of light on Twitter. You can find him at BillTilly1973. He makes comedy trading cards about every episode that we do.
That he does.
He keeps us laughing, keeps us thinking.
Sometimes keeps us crying.
Yeah, we appreciate him a great deal.
Yeah, we appreciate everybody that tweets about the show or recommends it to a friend or leaves a nice review on Apple Podcasts. If you leave a 5-star review and ask a question in it, we might answer it on an upcoming episode of the program.
Ask us a question. Come on. Come on. With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, in which I have become the Odo of several episodes ago. I'm watching Kira with another man. Don't like it. I'm going to go to a holosuite and jack off.
Wow. You're going to fill that holosuite up. Going number 3 in there.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.